everyone, and welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast for food safety professionals. I'm Stacey Acheson, publisher of Food Safety Magazine, and I want to thank you for joining us for this special bonus episode. Now, across food sectors, scales and balances are universally relied upon to maintain both quality and profitability. But for many, there's more that can be learned about how to get the most out of these important tools. Food Safety Magazine's editorial director and my co-host, Adrian Bloom, spoke to two experts in this field, and they're here to answer many of your most common questions and help fill in knowledge gaps that can help save you money and make your process more efficient. Those experts are Carl Jocelyn and Dan Montone, and here are quick introductions. Carl Jocelyn is the Industrial Market Product Manager for Industrial Scales at the O House Corporation. Carl has 30 years of experience in industrial marketing and has been with O House for 23 years, primarily in this role, but covering a wide range of scales and balances. Dan Montone is the Industrial Market Product Manager for Lab Weighing and Moisture Analysis Products at the O House Corporation. Dan has held various product management positions for approximately 10 years, specializing in precision motion control systems used in laboratory instruments and custom metal alloys used in electronics and medical devices. Okay, we're going to get right to that discussion.
Well, I am here today with Dan Montone, Market Product Manager for O House Corporation, and Carl Jocelyn, Industrial Market Product Manager for O House Corporation. And today we're going to be talking about how to weigh. So by some accounts, almost 25% of everything that we buy or use has been directly weighed. Weighing equipment is a critical part in processes from raw material production through to highly precise tools used for a wide range of applications. It affects the food we eat, the clothes we wear, and how everything is shipped. Now, despite weighing equipment being all around us, sometimes it's not clear how to select the right piece of equipment and how to use it properly to ensure accurate results. And not only are there several different types of scales, but even among balances, there are multiple configurations that can be confusing. So I'm going to start off with this question. What exactly is the difference between a scale and a balance?
This is a great question. Although a scale and balance are both used to weigh materials in one form or another, they're used for very different applications. For example, most people view a scale as a larger weighing device used to measure heavier or bulkier items. The readings on these devices are usually in pounds, with a readability to maybe a tenth or a hundredth of a pound. Balances are scales that usually have a much lower maximum capacity, very high resolution measurements, down to fractions of a milligram or even in the microgram range. So while it used to be that balances were calibrated and scales were a relative measure of weight, almost all scales these days can be calibrated.
Okay, thanks, Dan. And what is calibration?
So it's really just the ability to test a piece of equipment with a known controlled mass. So for example, a 1 kilogram mass, and then adjust the equipment so that it reads that mass as 1 kilogram. So without going further into calibration, let's just say that a piece of weighing equipment should be properly calibrated when it's initially installed and then checked or recalibrated according to defined requirements. There might be legal requirements and approvals, or it may be just part of your internal quality system.
Okay, so talking about scales and balances as one, what do you look for in them?
An easy way to think of what to look for is an acronym for capacity, readability, application features, and total cost, or CRAFT. So the first one is obviously capacity, and that's the total weight that you will place on the equipment, usually the packaging and its contents. That's also known as a gross weight. One thing to avoid is overloading the equipment. At least the scale will give an error code, but at worst, you could actually break the equipment. So a solid rule of thumb is to use a piece of equipment twice the total weight of what you're going to put on it. Some equipment will specify 150% overload, but always take into consideration how the weight will usually be placed on the platform. If it is a testing area like a lab, the weight will usually be put on very slowly, very carefully. but in a processing line or in a shipping area, it's probably not going to be handled as gently. So you have to be able to have some extra room in your capacity to take care of shock load. And that's why we recommend twice the weight for capacity.
R is for readability. So in the acronym CRAFT, easy way to remember. So R is for readability. This tells you a lot about how precise the scale or balance will be. So another way to think about this is the number of places to the right of the decimal point that the scale or balance will indicate on its display. Readability is also related to how consistent the results, both through repeated weighments. This is known as the scale's repeatability. And as you weigh heavier and lighter loads within the total range of the balance or scale, known as the scale's linearity. Here we suggest a spec about 10 times the readability you need. So if you have to weigh down to 1 gram, it's good to specify a readability of 1/10 of a gram. That ensures that the spec will avoid any errors that come naturally with all scales and balances.
It's also important to note that readability is not the same as accuracy. People tend to get that confused. Think of accuracy as trying to hit the bullseye on a dartboard. For a weighing device, accuracy is being able to give the correct weight every time. It needs to be the right instrument, installed correctly, including calibration on-site, and it must be used properly. Once these three items are achieved, it'll always hit the bullseye every time.
Yeah, so one thing to be aware of without going into too many details. So if you're specifying a piece of equipment for an approved application, like pre-pack for the sale to the public, your local weights and measures will probably require that you use what they call an approved or legal for trade scale. In Canada, that will be approved by the organization called Measurement Canada. In the U.S., NTEP Handbook 44 is used by states, so you will look for the NTEP certification. In both cases, the equipment will most likely be set up by the dealer you buy the equipment from, including an on-site calibration. In legal for trade weighing applications, this ensures fairness to both the buyer and the seller of the goods being weighed on the scale.
Okay, thanks, Dan and Carl, for that information. Now, I'm interested about the A in CRAFT, applications. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Applications, usually in the process or packaging area where the equipment will be used and the size of the weighing platform, is critical. So you have to look at where the device will be placed. Is it on a floor handling large totes? Is it on a bench or is it on a processing line? Is it a 5x5 floor scale out in the receiving area? It's very important to know where that scale is going to end up being used. You don't want the box or the package draping over the sides of the platform. You probably want a platform larger than the box to make sure that there's a bit of room. So you look for a package or the box size and make some adjustments to the width and the depth you need in the platform. If the weighing platform is on a line, there may be a preset dimension you need to reach, which will also involve how high the platform is from the bench, and for some devices, what the dimensions are for the rest of the device. Each of these size factors will help you select the right product. In food processing production, the first question is, where will it be used? If it's being used in a wet processing area where frequent cleaning is needed, then you'll need IP65 or even IP69K washdown rating to ensure that the product will be wet cleaned and will not get damaged by water. A good example of this type of product is our Defender 6000 checkware, which meets IP69K standards. In a testing area where there's probably not a wet use requirement, you're going to look for a product that can be easily cleaned, because even though it's not getting wet, if you have to clean it often, you may find that there is a food safety issue. That's why an NSF listing certification to the appropriate standard helps answer the cleaning question. We're not going to go into the details with the standards here, but the application area may be covered by a HACCP system, and NSF listing certification can help support a HACCP system. There also may be USDA AMS considerations, and USDA AMS acceptance of the equipment may answer that requirement. Another part of application is, what will you use the scale for? What kind of software modes do you need? And how will the equipment be connected to a system? If a simple weight is all that you need, then the requirements are very simple, like in a shipping area. If check weighing to a preset over and under weight range for packaging is required, then a different scale will be needed that can support that mode.
So the skill of the operator is a big consideration here. For example, a test that will be performed by a trained laboratory technician, more knowledge can be assumed, and the instrument could be a little bit more complex. So the extra complexity will benefit by giving a wider range of data, probably some sort of linkage to a system for traceability and analysis. For example, in highly regulated environments, a more complex balance will contain features such as user management, data and calibration logs, and communication ports such as Ethernet to integrate with a larger data management system.
And on our processing line, where precision and throughput are key, you will want a piece of equipment that clearly and easily tells the operator how much is on the platform. There may be a data connection back to the system and links to the equipment on the line, but the operator using the equipment has to find it quick and intuitive. So there we would look for a simple operator interface with a large, bright display, but potentially with a lot of system configuration under the hood and data connections to support your system needs.
Okay, I see. And then how about features? What would be required for those?
Features can extend to what the equipment is actually made of. Sometimes it's thin 304, sometimes it could be thick 316 stainless steel, and how durable it has to be. This is where the payoff on investment comes in. Usually there's a trade-off between the size, capacity, readability, and application for the equipment. And this rolls into what I call the first scale dilemma. You know, you think about when a business is started, you need a scale, but you're just going to use it to roughly check a package weight. You don't really understand all the requirements you have. So the least cost scale sometimes is bought because it meets the minimum requirements and the cost of it working 100% is not really apparent. But as you scale up, especially for large processors, there's more of a risk for loss for a poorly specified product and the more to gain from the higher efficiencies from a precise piece of equipment. So often the mistake is to get a first piece of equipment that meets the price point without taking into consideration the long-term costs. So the first scale is bought and then gets replaced when the true costs come through. By taking into consideration all the points we've touched upon so far, you can make sure that the first purchase is the right purchase.
So in the world of balances, features are a bit different because of the applications requiring an analytical or precision balance. For instance, many balances offer internal calibration or even auto calibration. These two things sound similar, they're slightly different. Both these features have built-in calibration weights and removes the need for external calibration. But in the case of auto calibration, this feature could be set up to self-calibrate based on a time interval, or even a detected change in ambient temperature. So due to the level of precision found in these types of instruments, environmental factors such as temperature, humidity, even static charges can dramatically alter the weighing results. Many times the semi-micro balance, which is a balance that displays a reading down to as little as 10 micrograms, will come standard with a built-in ionizer designed to dissipate static charges before a mass measurement.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dan. Now, to change topics a bit, from my understanding, moisture analyzers are a very specialized type of balance. Can you explain this instrument a bit more?
Sure. Moisture analyzers, they're critical tools in food labs, processing, packaging facilities. These instruments are used to test inbound ingredients to make sure they're fresh and at the right level of moisture. Moisture analyzers are also used during various stages of food processing to make sure the optimum moisture content target is hit. So although there's different ways to determine moisture, a common form of moisture analysis uses what the industry calls thermal gravimetric technique. Sounds like a complicated word, but it's really just a fancy way of saying that the sample is weighed, it's heated under controlled conditions, and then the weight of the sample is continually monitored and recorded as the moisture evaporates out of the food sample. So this process continues until either the instrument automatically shuts off or it's concluded by the operator. The result is given as a percent moisture content by weight. We've even had applications where thermogravimetric moisture analysis was used to test small sealed goods to determine the integrity of food, of both the packaging and food item under slightly elevated temperatures. So it's a pretty versatile instrument. These devices are basically a combination of a precision balance, a heater, a control system, and special software designed to accurately determine the moisture content of a food sample, for example, in a meat or a seafood. So the incoming lots will be checked to make sure that the water content is just right for processing. A lot that's too dry might be old, as proteins can shed water over time as they age. Another lot that's too moist can be rejected, possibly because extra water was added by the supplier. So on the processing line, moisture content will be checked again, and often a pH meter will be used to ensure that the food product does not become too acidic or basic. But once again, moisture content is the key factor here. So as with scales and balances, moisture analyzers come in a variety of designs that are suited to specific types of users. Most moisture analyzers use halogen heaters, which have excellent control characteristics and used in more accurate instruments. In some situations, for example, close to a food line, moisture analyzers with an infrared heater can be used because it's a design that contains no glass.
Okay, interesting. And what are some of the most important features that you would want to consider when making a purchase?
So a moisture analyzer is a bit more complicated because of the many variables found in different types of food samples. For example, seafood will require a very different test method compared with potato chips. So the three most critical parameters to create a test method for any given sample type are the final temperature setting, the heating profile, and the shutoff criteria. So the combination of these three parameters will determine the accuracy of the test results. For example, if the temperature is set too low, the test may take a very long time to complete. On the other hand, if the temperature is set too high, the temperature may begin to chemically break down the sample, creating inaccuracy and inconsistency in the test results. So it's really a balancing act between those three parameters in this instrument. So there's several things a user will want to understand before making a purchase. For example, will the application require a limited number of food samples be tested, or will many different types of food samples be tested? Less expensive units will provide one or maybe two heating profiles, definitely a lower temperature range, and a limited number of shutoff criteria. The more expensive units will provide the ability to test a broad range of samples by offering a wide temperature range, multiple heating profiles, and even user programmable shutoff criteria. So some of these instruments are very, very versatile. So you definitely want to consider the type of sample that you're going to be testing. So during a heating method, designing a heating method, I should say, for a given type of sample, this is arguably the most difficult part in using this type of instrument and setting up the moisture analyzer. This is usually done by trial and error until the optimum repeatability and test time is achieved. So OHAUS offers several different types of moisture analyzers, but our top-of-the-line flagship model, we call it the MB120. It makes the process very easy. So the most important feature of the MB120 is what we call the Smart Guide. This is a software algorithm that will automatically test a sample. It'll determine a method through software and then provide the ability to store the method. It can also be tweaked and adjusted by the user to optimize the test. So it basically cuts down the trial and error from many iterations to one or maybe two. In addition, the MB120 offers a wide temperature range, four heating profiles, and user programmable shutoff criteria. It also has the ability to store 100 different test methods and 1,000 test results. So there's something out there for everyone. It really depends on the type of sample and the range of samples that are going to be tested. So in the next OHAUS podcast, we'll focus on the various weighing applications found in a typical food processing environment.
Great. Well, thank you for this insightful discussion, Dan and Carl. We appreciate you being on the podcast with us today to discuss weighing considerations and how to weigh. So thank you for sharing this information with our audience.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks again to Carl and Dan for this informative discussion and OHAUS for sponsoring this episode. You can find more information about O House's scales and balances in the show notes in your podcast player or the episode page on our website, food-safety.com. We hope you enjoyed this special episode of Food Safety Matters, and we'll talk to you soon.